Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you don't have a livable wage, you're not going to be able to support yourself. It has nothing to do with whether you're a good person or a bad person. I have to push back all the time. I'm finishing my Master's of Divinity in seminary. I have to push back all the time and say to people all the time, no. It has nothing to do with this sin, abstract sin concept that we've created and that we perpetuated over years. It has nothing to do with being a good person or a bad person. It's socioeconomics.
Welcome to Bearcat, a podcast for serious women. I'm Brittany Shute.
And I'm Amy Westervelt. That was Reverend Rosalind Bouye you heard from in the intro. Rosalind is the reverend for a church in Detroit, Michigan. She also runs a food pantry there that's pretty interesting. It's got what she calls the client choice model happening. So it's set up kind of like a grocery store.
What makes that unusual, Amy?
Most food pantries are kind of, you know, you show up, you get a box, whatever's in the box is what you get. And, you know, sometimes it's stuff you need to make a meal, and sometimes it's like a whole bunch of coconut water and maybe some soda. Yeah. So this is like a big issue for food pantries to get their supply chain kind of worked out and an inventory system and all that kind of stuff. And there are some other examples throughout the country of these like client choice model pantries, but they're hard to run because you have to have enough money to buy food versus just relying on the donations that you're getting. So in Rosalind's case, she's been able to set up a donation from a foundation that is really focused on helping her particular part of Detroit.
Okay.
And that enables her to kind of plan out meals for people. The really interesting thing about Rosalind, and you can hear more about how her food pantry operates in another podcast on the Critical Frequency Network, the 51. She's like highlighted in the Detroit episode in there.
What's the 51 about?
Oh, it's about food access throughout the U.S. And we partnered with local reporters in different parts of the country to kind of give a picture of what it really looks like on the ground and how people are dealing with food insecurity and all of that.
How did Rosalind's story come into your life?
Oh, yeah. So I worked with this reporter in Detroit, Taylor Wisner. She's a reporter for WDET in Detroit. She got in touch with me. I put kind of a call out looking for stories around the food issue for this other podcast. And Taylor was like, well, you know, I want to look into some stuff around Detroit. I heard about this woman, blah, blah, blah. And then she went to Rosalind's pantry. And then she sent me some tape from that. And then she's like, I'm going to go back in a week. So let me know if you have like extra questions for her. And in the meantime, I got in touch with Rosalind too, because Taylor was like, you know, Rosalind also wants to talk to you. She wants to know what this whole thing is about. Make sure that like her people are protected.
Of course.
And like, I was like, oh man, this lady sounds awesome. So I called her up and we had a conversation and I was like, oh my God, this woman is amazing, mm-hmm. you know? And yeah. like, and so then I sent Taylor some more stuff and was like, oh, I want to know about this and I want to know about that. So anyway, like I worked with her on this episode and then, you know, there were just like she has like 2 hours worth of Rosalind talking about like her whole life story and all this other stuff. So I was like, you know, can I use some of this to tell more of Rosalind's story? Because she's really interesting. And like, I think, you know, more people, I don't know. I like her whole approach to the religion thing and the whole idea of like being of service to your community. This episode of Bearcat is brought to you by Sunbasket.
Sunbasket.
Yeah, we like Sunbasket. I actually have been a huge Sunbasket stan, as the kids say, for actually a really long time.
Yeah.
Much longer than they've been buying ads on podcasts.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of them because they use only organic produce and sustainably sourced meats and fish and all that stuff. But also they've put a lot of work into minimizing the packaging, which I really like.
It is an incredibly small amount of packaging, yeah, given how much stuff they send you.
Yeah. I mean, they use this like some kind of random recycled wool thing for their ice packs too. Yeah. Like it's like really next level, yeah, where I'm like, oh wow, they put some real time and energy into this. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You can just compost it. You can, yeah, throw it away and it'll kind of just dissolve.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. Yeah. And they have 18 different recipe options every week, which is crazy. You can filter by particular diet type. So if you're paleo or gluten-free or vegan, vegetarian, family, all these different things, or you can just look at the whole array of recipes that they've got coming and pick what you want, which I like too. So, okay, I'm a big fan of cooking. I'm like a longtime cooker.
You're a good cook.
Thank you.
You're an excellent.
I can't say that about myself, but thank you.
You're welcome. You're an excellent home chef.
Thank you. Thank you. But Brittany is not a big fan of the cookery.
I'm not an excellent home chef.
So this was like a good test because, yeah, for me, I'm kind of like, oh yeah, the recipes are easy, but I think you found them to be, easy to follow and stuff too, right?
Everything's pre-measured, which, yeah, I thought was really helpful.
Yeah, that's
nice. I was just given what I needed to work with, and mm-hmm, that was it. And we have a pretty small kitchen. And two adult people who are having two adult people in our relatively small kitchen can be a challenge. Mm-hmm. It was pretty easy for us to both be in there working. Either something was already cooking and then one of us was prepping, and sort of like we could both kind of jump in and help each other. And that was really nice.
Awesome.
So,
yeah,
we don't always get to do that. It's usually one or the other. And then I don't clean up. That's not my job. And but the cleanup's pretty easy, which is great.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know. I also like that the recipes are usually something that I don't necessarily already know how to cook, mm-hmm, or might not have the ingredients for. So it's, yeah, kind of fun to try something other than what I would sort of default to cooking.
Absolutely. Definitely much more interesting things in our diet. In the week that we had our Sun Basket delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And not always stuff that I would then go figure out how to cook myself.
Right.
But I was really delighted that it just came to me all pre-measured and
ready to go.
Sorted and,
yeah,
easy.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah,
easy.
I know. I really like it. Okay. So if you're interested in trying out Sun Basket, go to sunbasket.com/bearcat. BEARCAT, and you can get $35 off your first order. That's a meaningful amount off. It's almost half off of the first basket.
It is. It's healthy. It's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
We really recommend it.
Yeah.
Sunbasket.com/bearcat.
Roslyn appears in an episode about Detroit, and I talked to her on the phone a few times after that and got more and more of her story and was like, oh man, she's a total Bearcat.
She's a total Bearcat.
She's amazing. Like, she was a drug addict for, 20, 30 years. She was in prison for a long time. So she has a criminal record. She has this past with drug addiction. And so she is just really focused on, how do we continue to treat people like human beings, no matter what's going on in their lives. Here she is talking a little bit about her own past and how that sort of set her up for having a lot more compassion than maybe the average person has for people who are really, really down on their luck.
At any given moment, someone can take your children under the guise of neglect, but you're there at home with the older brother and sister because you got to work 2 and 3 jobs because there's not livable wages out here. So by the time all of that is happening, and then you're asking people to stand up and do this and speak up, or it's not that people don't want to speak up, it's just they're overwhelmed. And that's how you continue to beat people down. That's how you control people. That's how you eliminate the possibility of someone calling you to task. Because I'm just trying to make it. And then you're afraid if I say something, I'll lose my children. I'll lose everything. I was a drug addict for 20 years. I'm a convicted felon. So I know how it feels to have your voice snatched from you, to be afraid, should I say something today? And even if I say something, will they believe me by virtue of the fact of where I sit? You see what I'm saying? And no one starts out that way. No one has that on their trajectory. So this food pantry serves as more than just a meal station. Our role is in community is to build people up, to remind people that they are valuable, viable human beings. They have worth.
So what sounds interesting to me about Rosalind, not having spent time talking to her the way that you have, is that I feel that there's very unfortunately sometimes this misunderstanding of the relationship between social justice work and faith.
Yeah.
Right.
And
which is an odd thing to have to even address because of course so many faith traditions come out of this sort of basic idea of holding people's humanity and sort of basic rights as the most important part of you know, then believing in like a higher purpose and maybe maybe a higher being and sort of why are we all here and what are we meant to do for one another and how are we meant to care for one another, right?
Right.
But it's something that it sounds like she's really had to sort of fight to make a place for that in a sense.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that Rosalind talks about a lot is just how, you know, taking care of people is like what we're supposed to be doing, you know? And she has this way of talking about how, you know, the real sin is like not taking care of people. It's powerful. I'm going to play this tape for you now.
Okay.
When we specifically target who gets to eat, something's wrong in the society. That's not natural. It's evil. That's the evil in the room. Yeah. Not the things that we want to call as these quote unquote sins. The evil in the room is that people are in the food pantry. That's the sin. The sin is that people don't have fresh running water. That's the evil. That's the sin. That's what we're accountable for. The reality of it is that we're not taking care of each other.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we've talked about this a lot. Like, you know, both of my grandfathers were ministers.
Yeah.
And my grandpa Shute in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was really, it was just kind of baked into his theology that this is the most important thing is
right.
the caring of for one another as I understood it. And it's hard for me
right.
now. I mean, you know, I don't remember and I can't ask him anymore because he died 20 years ago. But
yeah.
I think about it a lot because I'm not a person of faith, but I respect a faith tradition that prioritizes
right.
like people's humanity first and foremost. And some of my
right.
closest friends are very religious, and it's interesting that that's not like it's actually the thing that brings us together,
right?
Because they also are not concerned about whether
you go to a particular church or whatever,
or if you're,
it's just like
or
the
if you're,
human thing.
Yeah, if you're queer or whatever it is, that like whatever life choices or like basic things about you that are supposedly judged by certain mm-hmm. religions or churches, like they don't have any of that. That's not where they're at either. They're like, we just want to love everybody.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be that radical anymore. But sometimes it is.
Yeah. 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 She got into that quite a bit around the water situation in Detroit. So this was in the news, I feel like a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
More so than it has been recently, but it hasn't really stopped since then. So like a lot of people in Detroit were having their water cut off for not paying bills. But the big problem with it was that they were getting bills that were like $600 because their pipes were so bad that they were leaking. And then they were getting these giant bills that you can't pay on like a low, low salary. Or really, I mean, a $600 water bill, like that's pretty crazy
that.
For most people,
I don't know anybody that wants to pay a $600 water bill.
Yeah. So then they're getting their water shut off.
It's called a utility for a reason.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, too, that I think people don't realize unless they're in that situation is it's like one of these things happens and it's this whole cascade of things that come on the heels of that. So like, you know, you can't pay your water bill, your water gets shut off. Then, you know, because your water's shut off, you can't shower and you're showing up for work like dirty and smelly and maybe you get fired, you know?
Or you can't cook at home.
Or you can't cook at home. And so like, so, you know, Rosalind is really like, she really makes an effort to be attuned to what's happening in people's lives.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the water being shut off. Sometimes it's the lights being shut off. Sometimes it's like a job that got lost. Sometimes it's, you know, people got evicted. And so whatever food they had bought is now gone. So yeah. She'll, you know, she always like, I'll play some tape here where she talks about how she just sort of tries to plan for all these things that are happening in people's lives.
Yeah. Well, and if you're in temporary housing,
yeah,
you can't always cook the way that you used to, and you can't.
Or if you're like living in your car.
Yeah, you have to substitute. Like there's like, yeah, your needs are very different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here she is on that.
So the people who live in the community, who exist on the margins, you criminalize them and you turn off their water. You say that they're not paying their water bills, and water bills should not be $600 a month for anybody. So we have a watering station here for families so they can get water. We're a stopgap for that, but our biggest role is to affect policy change and to challenge that people be able to pay based on their income, because the payment plans are not the answer. Well, how could they possibly be the answer when you don't have the money to make the payment? Base the bill on what someone's income is. You know, we've seen it work in other states. It can work here. But once again, that's a tool. It's a tool to stigmatize and to eliminate people. And women and children are the first to go.
The sort of happier side of that is that she also plans for things like, you know, if she knows that there's a lot of birthday parties coming up, or she knows that like...
It's graduation.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she tries to plan for that stuff too. Yeah. And like just give people that little layer of still being human, you know, yeah, that I think is so missing from our interactions with low income people in general, yeah, these days, you know. So here's a little bit from her on that.
It's getting warm. People are about to have little events for their kids that's graduating from junior high school, graduating from high school, so they might put some hot dogs on the grill. So I wanted to make sure we have more hot dogs for families this month. It's a small thing, but it means so much. You know, because if you get in your mind, because you're worrying, okay, I'm not going to have the money for this little extra right here. So it's that little extra that I'm trying to be conscious of, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this lady is, like, amazing. Also, it's like I'll play some tape from her here, too, where she talks about how she makes herself available to everyone so that, like, everyone comes in. She makes appointments for people, and then they come in, and they meet with her, and they tell her everything that's going on. And then, you know, and she said that, you know, she goes, you'll hear her. She says, like, they have as much time as they need.
Yeah.
Everybody needs, like, time to vent. And, like, that is that's a huge service.
It is a huge service.
You know?
Yeah, it's one thing to, right? Like, there's some saying where it's, like, it's one thing to, like, you know, feed someone, like, to, like, literally feed them food. But it's another thing to, like, feed the whole person, right?
Yes. So I'll play a little bit from her on that here.
So you have to be in tune with people. And so I try to make sure I'm attentive. Everybody gets the same amount of time as long as they need at that desk. So whatever you need to tell me, what you need to talk about, whatever's happening that's causing you so much pain, that's the opportunity that you get to talk, no matter what, whatever you want to talk about. And I take time for everybody. It's draining at the end of the day, but it's okay. It's okay because... we all need somebody to vent to, yeah. So that's when the families would share a lot with me, and they'll say, but this is what's happening, that's what's happening, yeah.
Okay, and then she also talks about how, and this is again, like I feel it's really funny because I feel like she is like by far the person I've talked to in like recent years who embodies actual Christian values to this really, really high extent, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
But she is constantly having to fight back against church leadership about certain things,
sure,
and against even sometimes her grant funders who, you know, she very much relies on, but... she also has to kind of be like, you know, telling them how it is sometimes. Yeah. So one of the things that she had to push back from them on was like their perception of who is worthy of this help, right? And it's like, well, we're here to help women and children. And here's Rosalind's take on that.
So oftentimes I have to push back and disrupt this construction that, well, if people just got to know God. No. People know God. That's not a problem. When you're at your lowest, trust me when I say, you know God, it's socioeconomics. So I have to constantly make that statement. I have to constantly push back because I have people constantly saying, so the church is in the area and everybody wants to have, you know, the church is always, people always want to talk about, we want to feed people, but it's an attachment to it. We want them to feed people so they can come to know Jesus, so they can come to know God, so that, no. People just need to be, just give people the food. Just give them what they need, and that's it. Nothing else. The people don't need all that. And if you treat people kindly, if you treat people with respect and dignity, if you offer people graciousness and compassion, everything else takes care of itself. And then this pantry set up for originally for women with small children. Well, I had to push back with that because small children grow up. They have brothers and sisters. Everybody in the house needs to be able to eat. And then because I sit in community, I recognize and know that a lot of the families do not look like what we can perceive as women with children suffering through food insecurity and water insecurity. So a lot of it is, I have a lot of men, a lot of fathers who have their kids. I have a tremendous amount of grandparents, neighbors, person down the street who just stepped in, a cousin, because for whatever reason, whatever has happened, families do not want to quite naturally want their children in the system. So they'll step in and they'll take that role over. And so it doesn't fall into the perimeters or guidelines that we would always think that it should look like. You see what I'm saying?
There's so few people left anymore that have the kind of time and energy and passion for really like just helping other people these days, I think, that Rosalind has. And especially given that, you know, she didn't have an easy life herself. And, you know, I feel like that's part of how and why she's so good at what she does now.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of inspiring to see someone be able to come out of all that and have so much to give other people.
Yeah. To like keep a, like use your own story to then build compassion. Yeah. And like,
like we would applaud, I feel like we often applaud people who like went through the stuff that Rosalind has gone through and just are able to like come out the other side and like live a get to a point where they have a house and they have a job
have
and
like
whatever, right?
Like a stable life.
You know, she's gone way past that to like being able to give that to like hundreds of other people.
She can provide stability for other people now that she has her own.
Yeah.
And like, and understands that that's like, it sounds like with a lot of ministry, I feel like that becomes part of your calling, right? Like
yes.
It's not just like an obligation. It's like you feel a responsibility to be part of that social contract.
Yeah.
And to even do more than was done for you.
Totally. And also I think like speaks to why it's important to not just throw people away.
Yeah.
Like look at what this woman has been able to do. Look at how many other people she's been able to help just because she finally got the little bit of help that she needed. You know, like it's, I mean, like I personally believe that, you know, we should help people no matter what. But if you want to look at it really cynically from a numbers perspective, like people are a valuable resource. Look at what they can do, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway.
I think it's interesting to consider how far outside of stereotypes so many people fall, whether it's people who are grieving, people who are hungry, like there's no sort of like one set way that those people's lives have gone. And like none of us are sort of like this one dimensional version of that. Right. Like
right.
She's talking about how lots of different people come in needing food. Right. And
you
just don't, there's just like other people's lives are so unknowable.
Right.
There's no way that you can understand.
Yeah.
You know,
all the things that have happened to like put them on a particular trajectory and, you know, I also think too that there are such people's lives can be so dramatically impacted by actually like pretty small things going wrong. And that's part of the sort of fraying of the social safety net is that like it really only takes one pretty, what like might seem like a minor thing to really like torpedo someone's life, you know, like your car gets impounded and that's how you get to work every day and then you lose your job and then you know, it's like, it's like these things can really,
they happen very quickly,
fall quickly. Yeah.
I feel like the small things also make a big difference though, coming back, right? Like if you lost your job and you just really need access to healthy food so that maybe that helps with, you know, your sort of general health and your stress level and your just like daily ability to function and worry about one less thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think this question of like who deserves help, like, and like, this is really interesting to me. I think a lot about like, lately I've been thinking a lot because I live in San Francisco, but because this is happening in many major metropolitan areas, the idea of who deserves to live in cities and who like, and it's like,
and who deserves to live with dignity and like,
And I don't under, and it's fascinating to me that there's even a conversation about that.
Yeah.
It's like, well, who's allowed to do what? Excuse me?
And
like,
who are you to make that decision?
Like, who, like because it becomes a conversation about who's valuable as if different people aren't valuable to each other in different ways. Like as if relationships and communities are somehow just this weird give and take of like skill sets and money, and it's not, you know, so.
Yeah. I have heard for a long time, especially from, I would say actually like a lot from feminists who have some amount of like financial stability, who think that they're trying to like acknowledge that privilege and, you know, whatever, will say things like, well, you know, a woman who has like three jobs and two kids, like doesn't have time to think about like equality or doesn't have time to think about like whatever. And I'm like,
demeaning.
That's demeaning and patronizing. Like it doesn't matter where someone is in their life. Like they still have dreams. And they're still human beings who have desires for a better life for themselves or for their children if they have them, or maybe they don't have time to think about the state of the world, but that doesn't mean that like those thoughts don't exist in their heads or that they're like incapable of that. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that is part of the dignity piece too. It's like, no. Like,
I mean, that's how social movements are built. It's like, it's like people who work hard also dream of more.
Yes.
Right? That's that's the very, it's like, that's the only reason that social change and like the civil rights movement and like the women's rights movement, like those, like that's the only reason those things have ever happened.
The farm workers movement. Hello.
You know, like, I mean, like different, like.
I know.
And this is, I feel like this is just another critical piece of that, right? It's just that what Rosalind is serving, like what Rosalind is able to do for her community and the way that she's able to support people maybe doesn't have the same sort of aesthetic as like a farm worker strike,
right?
Like it doesn't, there's not people in the streets. It's just people, it's not just, it's that people need some food because they can't, they're just maxed out on whatever. Like it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate her approach that like, she's not going to make anyone feel needy when they're there. Mm-hmm. She's not going to make people feel bad for having to be there or whatever, you know? And like she's talked in other conversations that I've had with her too, about how she really tries to make it feel like a meeting place, a community center, like people can hang out there and talk to each other or to the staff or whatever. And she instructs her volunteers not to bother people when they come in. Because she said, sometimes I'll get volunteers and then they're all like super like, you know, excited to like help people, and you know, like, and no, it's like, no.
Some people's
needs. It's not about you.
Yeah. And some people's needs are not conversational, right? Like sometimes you need peace and quiet.
Yeah. Sometimes she's like, just let people, you know, be there to answer questions if people have questions, but let people come in and like pick out what they want and have a normal kind of stable experience.
Sure.
Where, because like, in order to get any kind of like social services in this country, like you have to jump through an extraordinary number of hoops. You have to stand in a lot of lines. You have to talk to a lot of people. You have to tell a lot of people a lot of stuff you don't necessarily want a lot of people knowing.
Yeah.
So she's kind of like, if people want to talk about stuff, that's fine. If they don't, we leave them alone.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, just that like small thing is like, oh yeah, like that's a nice break for some people.
Yeah, it's not about the person. I feel like this is something that you have to maybe unlearn about the way that we talk about how to serve people, right? So it's like, if you live in a community where there are a lot of people that are either homeless or housing unstable and they're on the street a lot, it's not their responsibility to engage with you if you want to offer them something, if you want to buy them food or you want to give them money, or you know, if there are ways that you want to try to help people, they don't owe you anything in return. You should do that because that's part of what you've decided is an important part, like that's part of the social, like that's a community you want
to
live in.
Yeah. Like they don't have to perform poverty for you or gratitude or whatever. No. Like, yeah. And I do think that is kind of something that people have come to expect from volunteering. And I'm not saying that like you should donate a bunch of time and it should be thankless and like screw you or anything like
right,
that.
Right. But
it's
you
like, sure. Like basic human interactions and stuff. But like, that's not, that shouldn't be like what you're looking for if you're volunteering. It's like, you're like just trying to be of service and that's it. You know,
you should, in my mind, you should do the thing that you would want other people to do for you.
Yeah.
Like that's it. That's the golden rule.
The golden rule, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So you make decisions. You and I talk about this a lot. It's not even necessarily when it's someone in desperate need. It's also just like your day-to-day existence, like being kind and being patient and giving people your full attention, you know, at the post office, at the checkout counter. Like, I don't care where you are. Yes. There are ways to live your life that infuse dignity into very small interactions that end up being very meaningful.
Yeah.
You know, and improve your own health and the health of others.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's what is so exciting to me about Rosalind's story, because she lives that.
Yeah.
Like so intentionally.
Yes.
Bearcat is produced by me, Amy Westervelt.
And me, Brittany Shute.
Our original music is produced by David Whited, and illustrations for each episode are drawn by Jennifer Kirkham.
You can find us online at bearcatpodcast.com.
Bearcat is available in the Apple Podcast Store, Google Play, and Stitcher.
Thank you for listening. Talk to you next time.